we do everything we can do to turn down our blackness.
Well, we're never gonna not have to do that, son.
Look,
we will be black out loud.
Skin is so black, I'm rocking all black, everything is black.
Black rims on this black wheels, black, this black, black wheel, put this black, black on black, 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 on black, on black, 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 everything black,
chucks. All right, so welcome to another edition of the Black Out Loud podcast with myself, my wonderful co-host, really great brother, brother Obasi.
What's up?
What's going on, man? We have a special guest with us, Miss Stacy. I don't want to get your name wrong. Stacy Joseph.
That's right. Yeah.
Stacy Joseph is here with us today. And it's going to be a really, really great episode. Just a little background on each of us. I myself am a bachelor's of arts in history and Africana studies from UNC Charlotte. Currently just working and grinding, doing different things. I'm into music now, more consistently than before, and just, you know, spreading the information to people that need it in our community, the black community, with brother Obasi. He's a graduate of North Carolina A&T. He's a therapist. He has a master's from, is it UNC Pembroke?
That's correct.
Yes, master's from UNC Pembroke. Very, very intelligent brother, Afrocentric, Pan-African, great views and perspectives. And Stacy here, with the information I have from you, you have a certificate in diversity and inclusion, an MBA, correct?
Yes, I have a bachelor's in philosophy and dance.
Yes.
From Vassar College, and also have an MBA.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And your research and personal exploration of African-centered rituals and rites of passage has led you to the center yourself and your life's work around the African philosophy of Ubuntu. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I'm sorry. It says, I am because belief in the universal bond that connects all of humanity.
Yes, yes. Ubuntu. I think you said it right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Ubuntu. Okay. Awesome, awesome, awesome. All right, guys. So we had somewhat technical difficulties, but you know how the devil is.
So, right.
So, yeah, but we're here now, and we're going to have a really great discussion. So I guess, we should just really get into it. Anything else you guys want to add or anything you want to say to the people?
I would just say, once again, I want to thank Stacy for being on, and hopefully
yes,
this will be a great conversation, a discourse that everybody can take and pull from and refer back to.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Stacy, anything you want
to
add?
I just want to thank you both for having me. I'm happy to be here. I think these conversations are really important and quite imperative to the progression of our community.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Indeed.
So I guess okay, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, indeed.
Awesome, awesome. So I guess we're just going to get into it. I've been, looking throughout the landscape, social media landscape, and just seeing like the conversations and things that have been happening in our politics, in entertainment world, things of that nature, and. I think we were having a conversation, may have been a post, where we were talking about, how women, black women, our sisters, don't feel protected by black men, and they're put in certain circumstances. There are certain circumstances that our black sisters find themselves in where the protection from anyone will be necessary, but particularly black men is very, very vital and very necessary in our community, and there is a lacking in that. And to go along with that, just having a misogynistic viewpoint and dealing with sexism is like, I think in psychology, correct me if I'm wrong, it's called like just stacking. It's like it's just layered with constant isms and issues that just weigh a person down almost. And I think, to quote Malcolm X, the black woman in the world is the most disrespected individual, disrespected human on the entire planet. It's like there's the social totem pole, and black women are at the very bottom. They're thought of at the least. So I would just want to get you your guys' thoughts on it. And just care to chime in, just your overall view, your world view as it pertains to our sisters, black women in particular. Are we protected? And before we get into it, I do want to say because we have Sister Stacy here with us, I'm gonna try to do my absolute best to not invalidate anything that you say, or I don't want to come off as, what's the word? Help me out. I don't want to mess this up, because this is a critical conversation. This is extremely important. I do not want to mess this up with Stacy here with us. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely, and I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah, but so just offer your perspective, Brother Obasi. You can chime in as well. How do you feel regard black women, particularly in America, because we live in America, are black women protected? Is there any type of protections for them? Is there any examples of this? Is there any movement that's geared towards protecting our sisters as much as black women protect us, as they've shown throughout history?
Well, I'll let Stacy have the floor, because, you know, existentially, I cannot speak from a vantage point of being a black woman because I'm a black male. So I'm going to give her the floor.
Okay. Well, thank you. I don't profess to speak for the entire group of black women, but based on, like you said, Justin, you know, social media and also social movement, social commentary, things that we see in current events, things that we're seeing right now on the backsplash of the Black Lives Matter movement, there is a sense that black women by and large, and as you mentioned, Brother Malcolm X also even said it. So, right, there's a history here of black women feeling and being unprotected in various ways, in social spaces. You know, right now we have black girls in schools who are unprotected. Resource officers are handling them in a manner that's inappropriate.
Correct.
You know, there's countless examples. We have the 11-year-old black girl in New Mexico last year who was beat up by a police officer as administrators and teachers watched because she took an extra milk out of the cafeteria. You know, so these are the things that we're seeing. And then more recently we have Ayanna DeJour, who was beat up at the onset of the Black Lives Matter movement, right after George Floyd happened. She's beat up by a group of largely made up of black males because of a traffic collision, right? She gets out of her car to kind of to say something, and she's brutally beaten, punched about the head, and no one intervenes. So I think, you know, as I said, I don't want to speak for the entire group of black women, but I think what we see and what we know historically and currently is that by and large, black women are pretty much left to fend for ourselves, and we are, in a sense, unprotected in society.
So I felt like you highlighted some very detailed sociological implications in terms of how black women have been treated from a societal standpoint and how they've been marginalized and subjugated. What do you think has normalized such mistreatment towards black women, psychohistorically speaking, in this country? What do you think has normalized this mistreatment?
You know, I think there's a few things. I think historically, if we think about slavery, for me, when I talk about America and the dynamics that happen socially, I always have to relate to what we saw during slavery and what happened during slavery and what didn't happen, right? So during slavery, if you are a black mother and your child is being taken away from you, naturally you're moved to action, right? Mm-hmm. But then you can't do what you want to do. And the community can't really rally behind you because there's consequences to be paid if that happens. Mm-hmm. And I think after years and years, and I mean, we're talking about epigenetics and experience and so forth and so on. bodily experiences, because in the context of slavery, the community could not protect one another necessarily, right? And we have the tradition, so where you have a Black man that might normally step up and protect a Black woman, he's disempowered in doing that. So that's the historical context that I think through epigenetics and also through what we see today socially in terms of the disempowerment of Black people and Black men, I think that that is, those are some of the reasons why Black women are left unprotected.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
No, that makes
perfect sense.
And so stemming from that, historically, Black men being disempowered and stricken in such a way, circumscribed in such a way to where they're confined in a box to where they could do something, but it would be so punitive, it would be so injurious to do so, that you necessarily have to decide whether or not you want to sacrifice yourself, put yourself in a sacrificial position, or save your significant other or your family members. And that's a real lose-lose situation in such a way to where it now classically conditions psychologically Black men to fear white men in power. So to protect your wife, to protect your loved ones, is to sentence yourself to death.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
That's a palpable association to where it would make you immobilized and debilitated in such a great way that it would incentivize your silence. It would incentivize that you now normalize the abuse and the marginalization, the denigration of Black women.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And I know I've never really, I wouldn't say never, but when you put it in those terms, like to be able to, but just to have the wherewithal and the gall to actually stand to protect Black women today, it's just the exact same as it was during the days of slavery. You're putting your life on the line. Like I don't have the brother's name in my brain at the moment, but the he was assigned a duty to protect Breonna Taylor in that moment, and he did the best he could. When the police officers raided into the home, and where she was left, she was shot, I believe, 8 times, and she was left for dead. But he did respond with gunfire.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that moment, he had a duty and responsibility to not just protect himself, but protect whom he was with at the time, which was Breonna Taylor. And they were asleep. And so his home, their home was being invaded. So it's a natural reaction to respond that way, to respond with that level of force. I guess it feels as if Black men don't see the imminent threat that is available. Like no one's running into our homes and drawing weapons on us, and we feel as if we're being robbed in the middle of the night. No, but we're seeing actions that have already taken place or are taking place in real time. A video could go online, posted within 5 minutes of it happening, and we made the majority or a couple of hours later, but it still happened. That is still indeed real time, I believe. And so our response to that, whatever the situation is, even if it's from our own, even if our Black men are failing to properly respect and honor Black women and they disrespect them, and there seems to be some level of vitriol and hatred towards our Black women, and they suffer from it mentally, spiritually, physically, that level of abuse is still unchallenged, even if it's not direct. Like we didn't have to be there, but we saw it, and be a level of justification for that. So you make a very interesting point that, like, it's the exact same way that back then it is as it is today. And so I guess the question would be, are we at slave today as we were back then? Like how free are we really if there is no immediate action and immediate response to an imminent threat that is available and present?
I would like to in the midst of something that Stacy brought up, or it might have been you, Justin, talking. Yeah, it was you, Justin, talking about the boyfriend who reacted in such a way that he replied with the lethal force and duress that was being projected in his direction with the same equal or greater amount of force in return.
Right.
But what comes natural to us in a lot of respects has to be inculcated, meaning through repetition, it has to be drilled into the psyche. So we have to have some type of codified system that says, Ubuntu, I am because we are, meaning Brianna, I am because you are, and vice versa. So I see you as an extension of myself. And metaphorically, many Black men from time to time don't see Black women as an extension of themselves. They don't see themselves as being something that is the corollary of the Black woman's womb. They are a reproduction of the Black woman. So therefore, because they don't see it as an intrinsic tie, that they otherize Black women inadvertently sometimes, or sometimes purposely. And I think it's important that Black men start to inculcate the importance of seeing Black women as one of the same, seeing them as an extension of themselves. And I guess my question to you, Stacey, do you see that similar type of thinking to where Black women are otherized? And also a second question leading up to like our first primary question, how would you define sexism and what role do you see sexism playing in the whole debilitating or disregarding of Black women?
Sure. And that's a great point. I think I want to start with sexism first and then get into the otherization of Black women. Right. Simply, I think sexism is prejudice or discrimination based on a person's sex or gender, right? Mm-hmm. But sexism looks very different upon race, class, right? And it's especially different for Black women because of the way that we are, because of the roles that are assigned to us, because of the characteristics that are sometimes assigned to us. And some of that has also to do with internalization. Right. So that sexism, the question of sexism and whether or not something's sexist or not, really depends on the context, the people involved, who you're asking. And it depends on a whole lot of other things that it really shouldn't depend on. It should be as simple as prejudice or discrimination based on sex or gender. Right. But we know that when it comes to Black women, that's not the case. The point you were making about Black men seeing themselves as an extension of Black women or vice versa, right? This notion. I think in this context, right? So then to bring this in the context of this incident that took place between Meg Thee Stallion and her boyfriend, from what I've heard, Kylie Jenner was involved. And there was some flirting going on between the two of them, Kylie and Meg's boyfriend, Tory Lanez, right? And Meg kind of had a problem with that, and she's arguing with him, and then, you know, then shots are fired. So one of the things that I'm wondering, would it have gotten this extreme if this didn't happen in the context of a white woman being involved, right? So that in this particular, the way that it played out, I wonder if there's this notion of whether or not we protect or respect Black women, whether or not Black men protect and or respect Black women, can become a question for the Black man as whether or not he's going to be self-sacrificed, right? So that maybe Nez did that to save face in front of a white woman. We don't know. I'm just kind of bringing this to the fore, right? So these things play out differently depending upon the context, because as you were both saying, we have Breonna Taylor's boyfriend on the other hand, ready to stand up and defend his lady, his home, his right, with equal and opposite force. And then we have something that looks very different in the Meg Thee Stallion, Tory Lanez situation. And I would say the obvious is that there's a white woman involved here. You know, we don't know, but I just kind of want to bring that up because I think it might be worth thinking about.
Right. I you know, the point you brought up, I felt that was very salient in terms of bringing in the racial aspect, the socio-racial politics that could be involved. Megan seeing herself being potentially made less than, inferiorized in place of a Kardashian who was now being placed on a pedestal, if you will, in this situation.
Right.
Potentially, we don't know all the facts, but just to speculate, I could see that being a very salient aspect of her anger and her frustration if she perceives a white woman being made preferenced over her. And this is her love interest. This is her boyfriend. And that makes it even more convoluted. Justin, I want to bring you in. What's your thoughts about that?
You know, it's interesting because I didn't think of it on that level. I saw the issue between Meg and Tory Lanez. I just thought it was just between them. But I didn't consider the Kardashians. I don't consider the Kardashians in anything. I think they should have never been around the Kardashians. I don't like the energy they give off. They just they're a little weird to me from the outside looking, and they're very weird to me. But I figured whatever the issue was, a Kardashian being factored into it in any way, shape, or form, like, no, they shouldn't have been. But because it is introduced, it is out there right now, is on the table. I could definitely see how that would play a role in their any issues that they may have had. Just on the surface, I'm being speculatory here. I could definitely see how that could play out. Just, you know, someone receiving some attention or any type of attention from your potential mate or someone that you're with, and actually, Meg released something recently. She went live and she was speaking on the experiences. I haven't checked out the entire gathered. She was, according to her, she was in a space where she felt she was 100% safe. She was around friends and good people at a time where, I believe it was around this time last year, she lost her mom. So she was in a space where she felt comfortable around friends. Like, this is a place where she wanted to be. So how did it go from, this is where I want to be, I'm in a good space, I'm having a great time with friends, to this? And it doesn't surprise me at all that a Kardashian would be involved in something like that. That there's something with them when it comes down to black people. We're seeing it recently with Kanye. I don't want to deviate from the topic, but we're seeing it recently with some black men who have been involved with them and have tried to break away from them immediately. not even a few months, and you're already trying to get away. There's an issue with them. And now here it is. We have another black man who failed in protecting a black woman, potentially at the expense or in the defense of these white women who don't want to be called white, but they are white. Like, this, it's that thing again. Like, it's them. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not placing all of the blame on them, because yes, he is responsible for what he did. He should be held accountable for what he did. If he did anything, allegedly, we don't know the full story. We don't know all the details. Meg, she deserves to be protected. She deserves to be respected. And no matter what space she's in, especially being around people that do not look like us and do not share our culture experiences, yes, we should be valued higher and respected higher. And that's... and that's an unfortunate situation. We have two dynamics. We have a black man who had to respond immediately and knew better. Brianna, her friend or boyfriend, whomever she was with, protecting and standing up and defending his, what a black man should do. And another one who was being completely irresponsible after just receiving his master's and being a completely independent music artist and being in the music industry, knowing what that means, that's crazy to me.
Right.
But yeah, those are my thoughts on that.
I think this situation is multifaceted. I feel like it's a few dynamics here. You can have one dynamic that's not being considered is Tory Lanez is very diminutive in stature. He's 5'3". So he could be having this Napoleon complex situation going on. And then
yes, indeed.
Conversely, Megan Thee Stallion, she's nearly 6 feet. And so that's a dynamic in terms of, it is my manhood or my masculinity being measured by the heights that we share in contrast. And if that's the case, do I now have to be compensatory in my actions and I have to do something to compensate? So now I send my anger or my compensation through the chamber with a bullet through the chamber. So that's the aspect. And then is Megan feeling as though she's now being secondary as opposed to the Kardashian being primary in this situation? She's being put on a pedestal and prioritized while I'm being minimized. And then there's also the pull of the larger society that idealizes or that lionizes European features. And European features are now being normalized. So am I now feeling less than as a result of my Black spouse now putting this Kardashian on the top shelf and I'm being made to be less than? And also modeling, who are we using as models for our interpersonal relationships, our intimate and romantic relationships? Are we using Bobby and Whitney? Are we using Ike and Tina? Or are we using Asar and Asset? Or are we using Ruby Dee and Ossie Davis? Who are we using to model our relationships? So that was just something that kind of stuck out to me, those different pillars of this situation.
Those are great points, right? Because when we talk about equal and opposite force, right, I could totally see this sort of Napoleon complex and maybe the extent to which he felt emasculated, embarrassed, whatever have you, maybe that's the way that he responded, right? With equal and opposite force. And the same thing for Meg Thee Stallion, maybe to the extent to which she may have even in that context felt otherized, right? Mm-hmm. Or felt diminished, as you say. She may have responded in equal and opposite with equal and opposite force, which then caused the altercation, which then caused the shooting, you know?
Right. Mm. And I think that's what makes it exceedingly important that we have de-escalation skills. We learn how to communicate, effective communication, so we can mitigate the likelihood of a situation going from 0 to 100 and becoming something that's inflammatory to the extent that now lives are at stake as a result of something that was so minimal but had maximum consequences because there was a lack of diligence as it pertains to discerning through the issues and figuring out what's the root of the issue and how can we constructively work through it as opposed to doing it in a destructive fashion.
And it seems as if because of the things that we've gone through as a community, as a people, that it's almost like we have a predisposition to chaos and disorder. Chaos, disorder, and dysfunction within our own community is like it's almost glorified. I mean, you see that in our interpersonal and in symbiotic relationships that Black men and Black women have with one another, the situations or the instances where how we, you know, rear and raise our own children, our relationships at work, even especially through entertainment and even in hip hop culture, which I am not only a fan of, but I'm a part of myself and have been guilty of it, where we don't value with one another. I mean, it's most of our major records is very isolated, very independent, very, I don't need no man for this. I don't need no woman. I don't need a Black woman for this. Or they're only good for this. If they're buying me something or if they're pleasing me sexually, this is the only space where I'm able to value them. And a lot of people have used that as a justification throughout social media that I've seen. And I'm pretty sure you guys have seen it as well. She uses men for sex and money and to buy have material things bought for her, and she's owning her sexuality to the point where she's disassociated from men until she's in a real life situation and now she needs protection. Now she's the vulnerable Black woman in this instance. So some have made that argument, which I don't believe it at all. It's a crock of BS, but They're saying Meg is she's an opportunist. She's changing the narrative to work in her favor now. So is there any type of validity whatsoever to that statement where she's taking her situation, her circumstance, and placing herself as a victim as opposed to a victor when she's rapping about you know, sharing in some of those misogynistic views, sharing in the materialism and the, you know, her opening up her sexual prowess and dominance. Is there any type of validity in that statement? Stacey, I guess I will direct that question more so to you and just, you know, share a few of your thoughts on that situation, if you will.
Sure. You know, here's the thing. Human relationships are complicated. Mm-hmm. Identity is complicated. And in as much as we sometimes talk about identity as something that's fixed, it's transient. It can be transient depending upon where you are, who you're around, and what's happening. So that a woman can be strong, she can also be vulnerable. She doesn't have to be one or the other. She may be, she shows her strength more in certain contexts. So she is a rapper. She's in a male-dominated industry, right? So there, her lyrics and other things, perhaps her lifestyle, maybe she portrays one persona, one part of her identity. And then in other aspects of her life, she may be able to be a bit more vulnerable. I think anytime violence is committed against a person, no matter who you are, you are rendered more vulnerable, right? So that's the nature of it. I don't think that she's changing the narrative. I think that she is existing in a space right now of having been violated. The limited information I have on her, both her parents have passed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I always feel like knowing myself, and again, centering this in Ubuntu, right? I am, because we are knowing myself in moments when I have been my most defensive, or if I've come off a little rough, it's because I've felt threatened. And I think that there are large amounts of Black women who have to put on this persona, right?
Right.
Lawrence Dunbar talks about wearing the mask. I think sometimes when you are in spaces enough where there's aggression towards you, where there's sexism happening, where there's violence happening around you, you might put on that persona of being rough and being hard and being a stallion, when really there's also that part of you that is vulnerable, is hurt, is hurting, is wounded. So I don't think she's changing the narrative. I think a lot of us exist in this way. I think a lot of us carry our pain. We carry our wounds. We also carry the historical wounds of the ancestors. And so we bring all of that into the spaces where we exist. And then you have various outcomes, especially if you're not aware, especially if you're not working through those things.
So what I'm hearing is that Megan is feeding into the rules of the environment. And when you're wrong, do as the Roman do, you know, to loosely quote that, paraphrase, you know, do as the Romans do, you know, so you're basically adopting yourself to an environment, you know, so if you don't control the environment, you capitulate to the environment. And so that explains why we see more Little Kims, why we see more Nicki Minaj's, why we see more Cardi B's, why we see more Megan Thee Stallion's than we see Queen Latifah's, or we see MC Lyte's, or even like a Missy Elliott, who didn't necessarily, her rap style wasn't solely contingent upon sex and exuding sexuality. And so that's because the system that is not ran and operated by Black people are just a talent. So it's no coincidence that our talent now necessitates that we self-sabotage or we self-denigrate, because that's what would get us compensated. So we're incentivized to denigrate ourselves, to marginalize ourselves in our lyrics, because we don't control the state. We don't control the landscape and the environment of hip hop, the industry. Europeans do. So the ones who sign the check necessarily determine where the money flows. And if the money doesn't flow in the direction of self-healing and self-conscious rapping and lyrics, then it necessitates that you are destructive. It necessitates that you say things that are going to be insidious and salacious on these tracks that are formulating a certain ethos and a certain aura and energy. So to the extent I understand the conversation about, well, what about Megan's lyrics? But her lyrics does not justify her demonization. It doesn't justify the violence against her. Now, there's a conversation to be had about entertainment and what we call entertainment. Entertainment in cases, the words enter me. If you really decode that word, you'll see those two phrases enter me within the word entertainment. So we have to be careful what we deem entertainment. Entertainment is an apparatus for expressing subliminal messages into your psyche while convincing you not to think because it's just entertainment. So we have to be careful what we're deeming entertainment. So, you know, the system of hip hop is controlled by an underbelly of patriarchal values. So it necessitates that Black women are over-sexualized, hyper-sexualized. And so they have to put themselves in positions to maybe garner the type of money that they're looking to earn through objectifying themselves, because that's the nature of the game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the irony, right? And there's a bit of a dichotomy there, because at the same time, Black women are over-sexualized, but also defeminized.
Exactly.
Right? And there's so many examples of that in the entertainment industry. So then you have, like, you know, this hypersexual persona. However, everyone is not considered feminine.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we saw the backlash of a subculture of Black men who were so quick to villainize Megan Thee Stallion via her lyrics, so it could justify her subjugation. So it could justify her being made subordinate to other Black women who have this veneer of being more respectable, have this veneer of being submissive and capitulating to men's idealisms of what a woman is and isn't. And I think that goes into that question about her owning her sexuality like Black men do in hip hop, but yet they're not demonized on the same scale because it's okay for them to do so. But if Megan Thee Stallion does it now, that's grounds for her to now be severed from the Black women who need to be protected.
All right. Absolutely. I just like to point out that, I mean, that is a thing in culture, but it's heavy in hip hop culture in particular, and I'm sure it's available. You can see examples of this in other genres, but when you're speaking about Black music in the cultural context of today, and we're talking about hip hop culture because that's what most people are familiar with, there has been a long history of not just hypersexualization, over-sexualizing women, undervaluing women unless they're doing something for men, and men exuding that same mentality and behavior and expressing that through their lyrics. But there seems to be some sort of, from what I've noticed, just anytime a woman is taking ownership of her sexuality, taking ownership of her business. She had a label dispute a few months ago, and that's getting worked out, but she jumped out there and she let it be known what the issue was, and she's getting it taken care of. So she's doing different things on multiple fronts. She's representing fashion brands that are owned by Black women. She has a relationship with Beyonce, who's the number one R&B artist in the world still. And she's doing so many things, and I guess there's this feeling, there's the sense of Black men seeking to get gain access to that so they can control that. So you may have someone who has a interest in being in some sort of relationship, whatever that relationship dynamic is, to sort of, you know, it's almost like a wolf in sheep's clothing. You know, I just want to come and help. You know, I see a Black woman. She's a boss. She's independent. She's doing her thing. She's owning her sexuality. Let me come in and you know, sort of guide and facilitate. When in actuality, when they seek to control, because some Black men have never been able to process and handle a Black woman owning something without their presence, participating in a culture and dominating that we once held as ours. I said it a couple years ago, women are running hip-hop. Not just on the forefront, but behind the scenes. There's a lot of things that, there's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes, from fashion, art, blog, media, entertainment, and there are a lot of Black women in particular behind the scenes that are really doing some incredible things to allow Megan Thee Stallion to flourish, to allow Nicki Minaj to flourish, Cardi B's, The list goes on. And even other women in hip hop who are not as notable, the Rhapsodies of the world, the, you know, just other artists and women MCs who are dominating in this culture. There's a pocket of men that I've noticed that just wants to come in and, you know, seek to regain control of that. Because it's like, I feel some men would feel a way if a woman is doing things in music in a space they once dominated, or even not just in music, but in the corporate world. Oh, she has her own business. I see photos of women buying high priced vehicles and, oh, you got that on your own? Oh, you don't have a man in your life to help you do that? You're doing all this on your own? You have a whole house with multiple bedrooms and bathrooms, and I didn't get it for you? No black man got it for you? How'd you do it? How can I delegitimize it? How can I take that away from you? Like, oh, you must do something, you know, use your body and engage in some sort of sex work to get that, because you couldn't have got that on in a legitimate fashion. That's what I'm seeing.
So what I'm hearing from you is black men are now being the carriers, the perpetuators of what is what I would deem or characterize as neo-paternalism, where we want to the framework of the blueprint of white patriarchal values and conservatism as a means to use sexism to subjugate and inferiorize black women. So we love the sexuality. We love you exuding your private parts and you exposing yourself to the extent to which we can monetize it. And when we can no longer monetize it, now it's problematic because we don't have control over it. And I have some statistics here that come from the Journal Blacks in Higher Education from 2006. It's a little bit outdated, but from some other numbers I've seen, it's still about on par with these numbers.
Right.
So this black women currently earn about 2/3 of all African American bachelor degrees awards and 70% of all masters and more than 60% of all doctorates. Black women also hold a majority of all African American enrollments in law, medical, and dental schools. Looking exclusively to undergraduate higher education, the latest Department of Education figures show that black women account for 63.6% of all African American enrollments. And just to key this in, Megan Thee Stallion recently stated that she was going back to school and she was in school. So I wonder if that was an aspect of what played a role in the dynamics that led to the outcome between her and Tory, that she is pursuing higher education. And as many black women are pursuing higher education, are also outpacing black men as they matriculate through the ranks of academia. And that can reflect a certain unprocessed, suppressed level of inferiority that's being projected as a sense of superiority. But it is one that is a veneer. It's one that is shallow because it's one that's compensatory. I'm only being superior in my posturing and in my manhood, because I'm trying to compensate and I'm trying to conceal the true inferiority that I'm operating from that caused me to compensate in the fashion to where I have to control you because I haven't done the internal work that I need to do as a black male.
And, I'm so sorry. I just want to say one quick thing. I want to put it in the form of a question. With you saying that and you bringing up the statistics of black women being in a better position academically, and what I stated previously about them advancing in culture and in politics and, you know, economics, could that in some way could that create an issue with within the black household? Could it be that if there is a higher level of education and economics and black women excelling and advancing at a particular rate, could it, you know, somehow inadvertently mean that there is actually no need for a relationship with a black man who would be considered a lesser as opposed to an equal? Could there be an issue with that? Could that somehow be manipulated to the destruction and the devaluing of black relationships?
I'll get to that, but I'm more interested in hearing what Stacey had to say. in response to what I just laid out, and then I can try to answer that.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know, I actually lost my frame of thought in terms of what I was going to respond to what you were saying.
My bad.
That's okay. But you know, to speak to what you're asking, Justin, I would say absolutely not, right? Mm-hmm. I think it only becomes problematic in as much as Black people and perhaps Black men specifically allow themselves to become prey to Eurocentric thinking, mm-hmm. right? This also goes back to the narrative that we allow other people to create and to tell about our experiences. Our experiences can be families look, we exist in a system that we know is unequal, inequitable, is racist, right? We know that Black men are viewed as somewhat of a threat more so than Black women. So that these things are, there's going to be disparities in terms of how far Black women can go in spaces versus how far Black men can go in spaces. But when it comes to the community and relationships, we don't need to allow a racist and inequitable system to govern our relationships in our community, right? If you are building something with a black man, and if he has a bachelor's and you have your doctorate, what you're building together is not, it's not determined on those degrees. That sort of, I believe that is Eurocentric, that way of thinking. And then we start to measure our success that way, and then we start to measure our humanity in that way. Like, who's valuable because of all of the trappings and the jewels and the titles that they have? I mean, there's some value in these things, right? But not as it pertains to coming together, recognizing that we need to progress our community and that there are other things that we need to place at the center.
Right. I mean, I think that was very salient. I thought that was very imperative and incisive remarks that you had. The fact that we need to understand the dichotomy between a Eurocentric lens and an Afrocentric lens. A Eurocentric lens is always going to be one that is individualized. It's all about the individual and how the individual can come up. And to a great degree, it's about patriarchal values. So necessarily, in the scenario that you were painting, Justin, I would have to now make my wife or make my spouse the enemy because she makes more money than me. And it's part of my male chauvinistic ego that I have to be the breadwinner. And that is the sole way to provide for my family. And a lot of times our definition of providership is so myopic and narrowly linear that it cuts out the multifaceted dynamics of providership. It goes well beyond just providing money, because money isn't enough to sustain a family. A family needs love. A family needs protection. A family needs consistency and reliability, trust, loyalty, so on and so forth. So we have to really expand our lens and realize that if I see us as not dichotomized, because in Eurocentrism, necessarily, if something's up, then something must be down, as opposed to seeing it as opposite ends of the polarity that equally serve a role to allow for a balance, as opposed to seeing the opposing end as something to be an enemy or my adversary, but it's something that's complementary, that's doing its job so I can do my job. So I don't see my wife earning more money than me as something that's going to be self-sabotaging to my ego. I see it as a benefit, because I am because we are, and vice versa. So we have to learn to shift the lens from a Eurocentric dichotomized view to an Afrocentric diunital lens, which means I don't see it as either or. I see it as and both. I see the balance. I see the utility of her earning more money than me. And I don't see it as something that's going to debilitate me. I don't see it as something that's emasculating because my wife makes more money than me.
Wow. And you brought up an interesting point within that, because a lot of times, because men want to be the provider, like even myself, I'll put myself on the spot. Like, I see myself in the future taking care of things financially so my woman doesn't have to stress. And a part of that is ignorance, that I will admit that, you know, it's ignorant in thinking that money replaces the actual, the real needs. Because a lot of times, and this is something that Will Smith alluded to some months ago during one of their Red Table Talks with him and Jada Pinkett Smith, where he says, I thought if I was taking care of everything and providing everything and giving her what she wanted, all the material things, like I got this huge mansion, this big house, and I figured that, that would make her happy. And that wasn't what it, that it didn't make her happy, because the things that really made her happy is something that he failed to see and realize within his woman, things that he failed to realize and understand through the proper communication and seeing themselves as a unit. So you're absolutely right in saying that there is this thing that we have, even men with good intention can get it wrong sometimes, and thinking that, oh, this is, if I provide for this, this is what she really needs. This is going to replace all of the love and the protection and the being, just being reliable and being consistent in, you know, in the relationship and the growth of it. And not just providing in, you know, all the things that are pretty much surface level. And wow, yeah, so you're absolutely right. That was a very, very interesting point. And I'm so glad you brought that point up.
Yeah, I think I want to chime in real quick. I think what you brought up was very important because it goes right back to what I mentioned something earlier about who are we using as the models. The European view that the woman's love has a dollar amount. So therefore, if it has a dollar amount, then necessarily, i.e., that means what? It can be purchased. I can purchase your love. I don't have to earn it. It doesn't have to be this balance and harmony between us. I don't actually have to treat you as a human being that has your own autonomy, your own thoughts, independent of my own as a man. And you just need to serve to be a great sidekick to my successes as a man. And your happiness should be my happiness, because I'm the man. That's what I do. So your job as the woman is to complement my successes. And when we look at the Eurocentric lens, it teaches us that every woman can be bought through materialism, another Eurocentric trope. So it's imperative that we make sure that we're mindful. We have what is called a metacognition, knowing what I'm thinking about, knowing what's happening while it's happening. Who are my models? Because to loosely paraphrase James Baldwin, he said, I love John Wayne and I saw him shooting up the Indians, this, that, and the third, until I realized I was the Indians. I am in that story. I would be the savage. I wouldn't be in the place of John Wayne, because John Wayne is a white man in a Eurocentric society that is granted a certain dispensation and certain latitudes to do whatever he wants to in a whimsical way, which in an existential reality within the confines of America, no black man would have, or black woman would have, no such liberties to be John Wayne. We would be regarded as the savages. So it's important that contextually we understand who are we using as models for manhood and womanhood as it pertains to black man and black woman.
Absolutely. That was powerful.
Appreciate it. If you don't mind, Justin, was there something you want to say, Stacey?
No. Go ahead.
If you don't mind me taking over for one question for the moderating, because I feel like this is very imperative question. Do all black women deserve protection? This includes, yet not limited to, black women who have exuded sexual predatorial behaviors, sex workers, black women who participate in and hold misogynistic views, black women who value relationships with white men. And so, Stacey, I'm going to let you have the floor on that. And what's your perspective on that? If you need me to, I can repeat the question.
No. I have the question. I think that when there is a role, you have a role. It is your role. It's not depending upon who comes into the space, right? So that if black men see themselves as protectors, and I personally feel like we are all protectors of another, then it doesn't change depending upon what industry you're in, whether you're a sex worker or not. It doesn't depend on whether or not you love white men or love white women, right? I mean, here we are in the thick of the social justice movement because Brother George Floyd was lynched, right? And come to find out, he is partnered with a white woman. So do we still demand justice? Of course. Right. These things should matter. And I would also suggest, right, that to change up responsibility and obligation in the middle of a transaction or in the middle of the context of something, depending upon whether or not it meets, you know, your likes or dislikes, or it meets your notions of deservedness or undeservedness, is also not African centered, right? If you are a protector, you are a protector. You are a protector of people. You are a protector of the earth. You are a protector of your word. And so those things don't shift simply because of what other people are doing or, you know, what other people believe. Those things are fixed. Absolutely. You know what I'm saying?
That makes perfect sense to me. I think that boils down to racial, social, political lenses in terms of how do you view situations. You know, just like there's a dichotomy between Dr. King and Malcolm X. They had different religious paradigms and perspectives, but at the end of the day, a race first, a Pan-African paradigm would say, hey, in spite of the fact that we disagree in terms of our racial, socio-political stances and dispositions, because of the first contingency is race first, I still see you as valuable in spite of our political differences. And also another dynamic of that is a control of a paternalistic underbelly or undertone to, hey, I'll protect you as long as you comply to my definition of what is deserving of protection. That goes back to that that hyper-masculinity and wanting to have control and wanting to deem what is okay, what's not okay, what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, what deserves protection. And inversely, what's the back messaging that white people will receive if we say, hey, if Black people can find a reason to marginalize their own kind because of political differences, then hey, now we can use this as a means to subjugate and to denigrate and decimate them based on their own political rulings. You know, so if we politically are incongruent and we're not in lockstep with one another, then we can now use that as a metric to say, hey, we must now sever you from the race. As much as I vehemently disagree with Candace Owens, I would never agree with her being bastardized. I would never agree with her being dragged through the mud by white men on the basis that we disagree politically, just like I took issue with David Chappelle, although he had a brilliant stand-up that was very satirical and it had lessons and incisive points, I still took issue with the fact he felt the need, and I felt like it minimized or it derailed his messaging. It diminished his messaging when he felt the need to drag Candace Owens through the mud and make her and dehumanize her because of social, racial, political differences.
All right. I just wanted to chime in real quick. I'm of the belief, and I could be wrong. Please correct me if I am wrong, but I am of the belief that Black women, our sisters who engage in sexual and predatory behavior, who engage in sex work for monetary value and have engage in prostitution, porn, or what have you. Black women who hold misogynistic views against other Black women or just against women in general, and, you know, interracial dating, the Black women who engage in interracial dating and date outside of the Black race. I highly doubt we would see so much of it if there was a proper way for Black, not a proper way, but if Black men were leaders in the right way, leaders in the spiritual aspect, real leaders and real leadership in our household and in our community, in these public spaces, in these spaces where our leadership and our protection is indeed necessary. If we were doing our job, I truly believe we would see a lot less of that. So it wouldn't be a matter of do they deserve protection. They deserve protection regardless, but they wouldn't even have to and go that route if Black men did their job. If we didn't ascribe to the thinking of white Eurocentric standards, if we didn't ascribe to misogyny and sexism, and if we didn't play a part in, you know, being dysfunctional in how we deal with our people, especially our Black women. If we were really doing our job and doing our part in protecting Black women, and protecting little Black girls, because there's a whole nother deeper conversation as to why why there's the predatory behavior in sex work. And I think a lot of that psychologically is rooted in sexual trauma. So, and there was a lot of that comes from Black men within our own households and within our families not doing our part and not protecting protecting our Black women, especially our little Black girls. So we would never have to endure any of that. Just being sought out on the forefront. I don't think we would have in the entertainment industry, in hip hop culture, women making the statements and, you know, rhyming and enjoying the fruits of their work and speaking in such a way if we were doing our part in the very first place. I think there's a huge lack of, you know, Black men understanding and knowing how to be Black African men here in America in particular. So we would see a lot less of that if we stepped up and actually did more and followed the process of learning and unlearning all of the things that have sort of toxified our internal being. Does that make sense?
So, you know, while I can appreciate that line of thinking, I don't align with it. I think there's a little bit of blaming victim involved in that. Also, you know, there are so many reasons why people date cross-racially and outside their race and so forth and so on. And I can't say that it would be so placed on the fact that Black men who are also products of this system, of our environment, don't lead in large numbers, because I don't know that that's actually true. I think that's a narrative that we've also been told, and to some extent it's true. You know, but I think when you take into consideration poverty, right? When you take into historical trauma, even current day trauma, so we know that 30% of Black women have a history of childhood sexual abuse, but we also know that there is a legacy of childhood sexual abuse that also affects Black men. We don't know the numbers because we've been taught that Black men shouldn't speak out about that. There's a certain level of shame if they do. So I don't necessarily align with that. I do think that you could also find people like Miss Candace Owens who might be with a white man for various reasons, right? We don't know, we can't say. So I don't wanna say that, because I think by and large, there's a lot of great brothers out here doing great things. I do feel like relationships between Black men and Black women are super complicated. It's loaded with a lot of trauma and a lot of historical trauma. And when you put us in the context of a system that is racist, that is sexist, that is homophobic, that is ableist, all of these things, there's various reasons why people would not choose to be in a relationship with another Black person. But I don't know that it's because Black men are not doing their job, quote unquote, by and large. I wouldn't say that that's what it is. I think it's more complicated than that.
Yeah, to chime in, I have a quote by Dr. Amos Wilson where he says, when you want to destroy a people, you destroy the nature of their romantic love. You destroy their ability to love one another in a healthy sort of way. And that is done so within the context of a society that fosters destruction sociopolitically. And to chime in on what you said, Stacey, the issue is so pluralistic that it's affected both of us. So it's not either or. It's not, is it the Black man's fault? Is it the Black woman's fault? And Justin, I'm not insinuating that's what you were trying to articulate, but I feel as though it's an and both. And because within that 30% of Black women that you said that experience some type of sexual abuse, 60% of Black women experience it from somebody that they already know or were in a personal relationship with. So it's on familiar territory. So that lets me know that it is transgenerational, potentially, the sexual abuse, because particularly hurt people hurt people. And so if you have unprocessed sexual abuse, there's a great likelihood potentially that it could now be transmitted in one form or fashion, and verbally or physically in some type of way. And so that salacious undertone, if not dealt with, if not properly debriefed, can have a systemic effect on generations of Black men and women who don't know how to organize their sexuality in such a way that they use their sexuality, and inversely, their sexuality isn't using them as an apparatus to express unprocessed, what I guess could be deemed as hedonistic pleasures, where you're just chasing pleasure because you don't know how to control or organize this sensationalism of sex. So sex, in effect, is abuse, and necessarily your soul ties are now multiplied as a result thereof, because you don't know how to sociologically define sex as an element of a healthy relationship. It's just a extracurricular activity. That's like the book where it says, Black men don't heal, we hoe. So you see where Black men become particularly promiscuous as opposed to healing, because sociologically they haven't been trained to articulate their words to transmit a message that will allow them to have a plentiful and pervious conversation about the intricacies of their life and their experiences with women. And that is something that can affect us in a very intricate way. So as it pertains to sexuality and so on and so forth about sexual predators, sex workers, at the root of that, like you said initially, Justin, the base of that, the impetus of that, a lot of times is sexual trauma. If we can, and we can trace that all the way back to slavery. So, yes. And that deals with epigenetics, like you said earlier in the conversation, Stacey. And we're at the hour and 10 minute portion. We can record up to 2 hours, and beyond 2 hours, it'll shut down. So we have about 40 minutes to get into. We have a few more questions if y'all want to keep this conversation going, because I'm loving it right now.
Yeah, no, this is great. I'm learning a lot. I didn't know. What was that word you used? You said, is it unilateral, diunity?
Diunital.
Diunital. Man, listen. You are the dictionary, brother. You never heard that one.
I appreciate that.
Hotel, this is Obasi. You just got finished listening to part one of episode 4. Hope you enjoyed it. Stay tuned to episode 4, part 2.